This week's episode of Book Hype is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and for this episode, I'm joined by Karen and Mikhail. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Lovely to have you back, because last time I was with Tarek and Marima, so I like how we like to switch it up a lot. One of these days we'll all be back together again, but our schedules are just so crazy that three at a time is what we've been able to manage so far.
Secretly, we don't like Marima and Tarek, so.
Yes, you're not supposed to say that. She's kidding. She kids.
I'm totally kidding. I love them.
So for this week's episode, this is our book discussion. So we are discussing City of a Thousand Dolls by Miriam Forster. But first, before we get into all of that, we are going to discuss what we're reading right now, because it's always a really fun topic to hear what everyone's reading about. So, ladies, what have you been reading since we last spoke? Karen, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I finally finished Beautiful Creatures. That took me forever, but it was okay. It wasn't too bad. And then after that, I blew through Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I liked quite a bit. I still have to watch the movie, though. I know a lot of people like the movie more than the book. And then I read City of a Thousand Dolls, and now I'm on 17 and Gone.
Wow, you're making your way right through all of those. Very nice. How about you, Mikhail?
I read, well, right this second I'm reading, I just started Light, which is the last book in the Gone series by Michael Grant, and I've been reading that since the first one came out, so it's been, like, 6 years, so I'm kind of reading it with a little trepidation, and I also finished recently Shadow Bone by Leigh Bardugo, which, it was really good. It's like a Russian-inspired fantasy novel, and they were, the end especially was really gripping. I like had to do something and I read it instead. So it was that kind of thing. And I also finished Froy of the Exiles, which is the sequel to Finnegan of the Rock, which blew my socks off and was just a tragedy and a love story and a psychological study and a war story and a history. It was insanely good. And I highly, highly, highly recommend that series. And the last one's coming out in later this month in the States, and I cannot wait to read it.
Excellent. For me, I was reading a couple different things over the last couple weeks. I read Arclight, which is, and I have to go look and see who it's by because I forgot off the top of my head.
Oh, is that Joseph McQuinn?
It's by, yeah, I think so. Josie?
Yeah.
Yes, that's who it's by. Yes, so I read Arclight, which is a really cool kind of sci-fi book. It was really interesting, and I liked it. It had a little intrigue to it and a lot of mystery, and the opening scene is really, really tense. Like, you're kind of just dropped into the world. There's not a lot of explanation in the beginning, which was a really cool way to, like, introduce you to everything. And it wasn't to the point where you had no idea what was going on, but it was just creepy enough that you kind of got sucked into it, so I really enjoyed that book. That comes out in 2 weeks. And then I also started Red by Allison Cherry, and it's a really cool concept where basically redheads have their own town called Scarlettsville because they're not appreciated anywhere else. So they have their own town that they all live in, and it worships redheads, and it's really, really fun so far. I'm only about, like, 30 pages into it, but it's kind of cool.
That sounds different.
It is different. It is different. But I like it. And I also read, an adult book, Far in the Wild. It's the prequel novella to Deanna Rayburn's new series. And I love Deanna Rayburn. If you guys have not read her, you guys need to get her books. She, this series is a little different, but her original series was the Lady Julia Grey series. And it was set in Victorian England, and it's about this lady who is a very prim and proper lady. Her father is an earl, and, you know, she's wealthy and powerful, and she marries the neighbor boy, and then she kind of meets this other man as she's standing over her husband's dying body, and he's kind of a mystery, and she realizes that her husband is, in fact, been murdered, not he didn't die of natural causes like she thought. So she sets out to investigate her husband's murder, which just wasn't done in that time. And she gets the help of this man that she had originally met over his dying body. And so there's a whole series of books, and they're mysteries, and they're so incredibly well done because you never know who did it. And that's what I love about a good mystery. You should never know who the murderer is. You should have lots of guesses, and maybe you're kind of right, but you should never know for certain. And so her writing is just spectacular. And it's witty, and it's sharp, and it's not like a historical romance. There are romantic elements, but they're so minor. You know, they just add into the story. It's not what the story is, and her writing is just fantastic. So I'm reading her new series, and I do have A Spear of Summer Grass, which is the first book of her new series, which is set in Africa in the 1920s, which is also kind of really exciting. I'm super excited to read about that time period. So that's what I've been reading. And I also have a couple things that are like sitting on my to-be-read pile that are calling to me. I have The Waking Dark by Robin Wasserman, Tandem, and Another Little Piece. All three of those are like coming with me on my trip. I'm going to LA, so they're all going to come with me so I can read them on the plane. Should be no problem reading those on the plane. I'm so excited because that plane trips are like perfect reading time. You have nothing else to do. You're stuck in one spot. It's excellent. So I should have more to talk about the next time, but that's what I'm reading right now. And those are the things that I'm really looking forward to.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm excited. I love it when I get new books and new things to read and things that are actually really good. I love it when I get a book that surprises me. And honestly, Arclight was kind of one of those. I didn't know what to expect going in because you kind of get the summary on the back and you're like, okay, it sounds kind of cool. And then you actually read it and you're like, oh, wow, they're taking this to a place I didn't see it going. And it's actually really cool and it's different. So,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. I heard good things.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's not, like, overwhelmingly long either. It doesn't get too caught up in itself. It was really good. It was a satisfying read, which is always nice.
Before the ladies continue with today's episode of Book Hype, it's time to remind you that today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of Book Hype, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their great service. Our recommendation this week is Arclight, a harrowing sci-fi thriller about a teen who has survived horrors but lost her memory. For fans of Veronica Roth, Stephen King, and Justin Cronin, Arclight is a bold and astonishing debut about identity, unnerving connections, tortured romance, and the courage we find when we face our worst nightmares. Visit audiblepodcast.com/bookhype to get an audiobook, perhaps Arclight, for free. We thank Audible for their support of Book Hype.
So, oh, I know. Let's talk about our Book Bites topic for this week. Last week, we talked about the book, or last episode, we talked about the author that you read, even though you know that their plot lines are the same and their stories are the same. But you go back and you read them anyway. They're kind of like your guilty pleasures because you just can't help yourself. Mm-hmm. So this week, we're going to talk about something along the same lines, but a little different. We're going to talk about the series books versus a standalone. And do you have a preference? Because nowadays, you cannot pick up a book without it being a series. There are very few standalones in the world. That is for sure. So you guys, how do you feel? Mikhail, do you want to start? How do you feel about this topic?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I used to devour series. You know, if I found out that a book that I liked was part of a series, I was over the moon and thrilled. Now I sort of wonder if we haven't lost the art of the standalone novel, you know, and that like I feel like you can't get a teen, especially sci-fi fantasy story that isn't going to come in three parts. And, you know, there's something that's not satisfying about that, especially when it's assumed. And, you know, when you're looking for, like, I think a lot of the time the worlds that people build in stories are great and really entertaining and deep, but they aren't quite deep enough to carry on for, you know, three full novels. And that's, it's and the characters aren't quite deep enough either, which is not to say that they're bad characters. There's a lot of characters and stories that don't stretch over three novels. And I kind of wish we would all, like, take a step back and be like, okay, it doesn't need to be a three-book deal. You know, it could be a one-book deal, you know. Or, I mean, duologies, I think, is sort of becoming a thing now. I know Leia Seipas, who wrote Mistwood, is writing a duology of, what is it, like, some kind of fantasy fairy tale thing? It might not be fairy tale, I don't know. But I've heard of a couple of people doing duologies, which is slightly more appealing to me. I like a good trilogy as much as anybody else, but I do think that maybe there's room to step back and consider before, because it really is hard to go into Barnes & Noble and be like, okay, can I just buy a standalone fantasy novel? You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I completely understand. How about you, Karen? How do you feel about the topic?
I really like series. I definitely prefer those, I think. I like to be able to stay in the world a lot longer, but there's definitely something refreshing about reading a standalone novel once in a while where you can just pick it up, put it down, and it's done and over with, and you're satisfied. You know, you don't have to wait a year or two in between books, or you know that you don't have to go spend, like, $10, $20 on each book, and there's, like, 10 in the series, because that gets really expensive. But I'm definitely right there with you in that I don't like unnecessary sequels. I think the art of the standalone novel is definitely dying out a little bit. And it would be really great, I think, to see more people sort of tackle that really well, a single book really well, rather than stretching it out into three books when it really doesn't need to be.
See, I'm not sure the art of the standalone is dead as much as the purchasing by publishing houses of the standalone is dead. Because writers will write what they need to write to get the deal, in some cases. Do you know what I mean? If you have enough material to go on, most of the time they can fudge it, if they have to. So I'm not sure so much that it's about the book itself, or if it's about the expectation of the market. Which is, you know, two very different things. I do like the idea of the duology as well. Much like Ione and Iona, that's a duology as well, and that did really, really well. It's a very enjoyable set of books. That's a high fantasy. For me, after a while, series become excessive, and you can tell when someone's written more than they need to in a series. Or they've kind of done more than they need to with it. Like, it should have stopped, it should have moved on to something different, and it didn't, and it hung around, and you don't know why. So I don't know. I see both ways of it. I think the other way to go is when you write a series, if you're writing from different characters' point of view, so that every book kind of takes on a new character's arc while keeping the main plot line in the background. I think that's a really successful way to write a series that keeps it fresh and different. Because you can only be in someone's head for so long before it becomes a little excessive, depending on who's writing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the Wicked Lovely books did that, didn't they?
Yeah, the Wicked Lovely books are, while they may be considered a series, they're not. They're more of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like companion novels?
Thank you, they're companion novels, yes. You don't have to read them in a specific order. There are mentions of other people's within the book. And it's the same with Anna in The French Kiss. Like, Anna in The French Kiss, Lola and the Boy Next Door, and then Isla and Her Happily Ever After when that one comes out. Those three books can really be read alone. You're just missing the pieces when they talk about these other characters. And it's not drastic that the story is thrown off for you, but it will make you curious about how these guys got together, kind of thing. So that seems to be kind of cropping up a little bit more. It's also one of those things that's much more of a, like, romance, like adult romance novels tend to be written that way, where you have a couple per book, rather, and then maybe kind of some connecting theme throughout them where they're friends of the family or they're friends of this, that, or the other. But that's also, like, an easier way to write things and kind of get into other people's heads and to take scenarios in different directions without being stuck in the same people's heads all the time. So personally, I'm kind of on the fence about it. While I do like a good series, because I like to see the story fully taken to where it needs to go, I don't like to see the story overworked to the point of it went too far. So, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it all.
Yeah, that's sort of what, the Gone series is sort of like that. I mean, there was one book in the middle of there that I finished and I was like, well, nothing happened. You know, this book was written because this is a 6-book series and this was book 4. And, you know, it's very disappointing. I feel like it can thin the, it ruins your suspension of disbelief sometimes. But, you know, I mean, there are amazing series out there and series that, you know, stay in the same character's head. And, you know, I think it depends on how many stories are being told. Sometimes it really does feel like one story stretched over 3 books because, as you said, for marketing reasons. But, you know, sometimes there's just more than that going on.
Exactly. So, as readers and listeners of this podcast, in the comments, definitely tell us what you think about that. Do you prefer the standalone to a series? Does, you know, the series have a place and a time? Does the standalone have a place and a time? Or is everything being devoured by multi-book, basically franchises at this point? Make sure you leave that in the comments and let us know what you think. Now, oh, go ahead.
Sorry. The good thing about a duology is that the second book can become 2 movies, so you have a film trilogy.
Ah, yes.
Well, we all know it's
funny that you mentioned that, because I really think that that also is kind of playing into it, into a sense. Mm-hmm. Because unless you're John Green, you really, most people aren't writing a standalone novel. I can think of a handful of authors that I know of that sell well, that are popular, that write standalone novels consistently. I mean, yeah, it's not a ton. It's Sarah Nessen, John Green, Suzanne Colasanti, Elizabeth Uhlberg, David Levithan. But David Levithan, like, writes with everybody. Right. So he's, like, all over the map. I mean, yes, his are all standalones, but he is, like, so diverse in everything that he does, which is fantastic. But, yeah.
I think it's usually more realistic fiction, I think, than
sci-fi. Yes, absolutely.
Which I don't know why that is. I mean, you can have very satisfying, you know, standalone sci-fi novels and fantasy novels, and I mean, I know that all the classics are are in trilogies and things, but you know, you can still have a darn good book. I mean, Ender's Game, like, I know it's technically part of a series, but you can read that book and be like, okay, the end, you know, that's it. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder why that is. Maybe because life isn't like a trilogy, so it's more accepted in realistic teen fiction.
Maybe, I don't know. It's interesting though that's kind of how it works out. So we shall see. All right, so now we're going to get into our discussion of A City of 1,000 Dolls. So we're going to go first with our initial thumbs up, thumbs down reaction. And Karen, you're going to get to go first.
Okay. This was a thumbs up for me. Not a huge thumbs up, but it was okay. It wasn't bad. It's funny, actually, Jen, that you mentioned Ion and Iona earlier, because I was actually going to bring those books up and say that it reminded me a lot of that. Not necessarily in plot, but in the sort of execution of it and the culture that she introduced. And I had a very similar reaction to it in that I always have trouble with high fantasy and historical fiction because they throw so much at you in the beginning all at once, and it's just too much to remember. Like, in this, you had the castes and the houses and the names, and I was having so much trouble keeping everyone straight except for, you know, the handful of people that really stood out to me. So that was kind of tough to get through, but I read this in, like, chunks. Like, I'd literally sit down and read, like, 50 pages at a time and then put it down for a couple of days because I got busy. But those last 50 pages, like, I stayed up till 2 a.m. reading it because I just couldn't put it down, and it was so good. I just wish it didn't take 200 pages to get to that point, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, I do. Mikkel, how did you like it?
This book is a sideways thumb for me. I definitely didn't dislike it, and I think the concept is really great, because I think we all maybe, like, I feel like when you learn in school that, like, there are societies that you know, don't value their daughters and leave them to die and et cetera. You always kind of wonder, you know, what happened to those girls. And I think that this was a really interesting way of dealing with that. And I thought the society she built was very interesting. I didn't think that the book really lived up to its potential. I feel like it took the easy way out a couple of times. I feel like the mystery lacked tension. I didn't particularly care about Nisha. I didn't dislike her. I just wasn't especially desperate to see her get what she wanted. There were side characters that I liked better, actually. And yeah, I mean, I think I would recommend this book maybe to younger readers. There are some, you know, more intense concepts that might be challenging to younger readers, but I don't think that that's a bad thing necessarily. I would think that maybe 12-year-old me would have adored this book.
Yeah, it's kind of the same for me. I'm definitely a sideways thumb, closer to the downward angle, if you will. I didn't hate it, because I never would have, like, finished it if I hated it, but there were aspects of the story that I felt were fairly immature for a young adult novel, and that kind of took me by surprise, because it is marketed as a high fantasy young adult novel, which is not, it doesn't have all the elements that one would expect for that. So for me, I was kind of just like, oh, okay. So I had gone in with certain expectations that had to change drastically as I was reading, or I wouldn't have made it through the novel. I think the world building and everything was kind of cool. It had a lot to offer, but at the same time, it just, I don't know. It, like you said, it didn't live up to the expectations that one has, and it didn't follow through in as many ways as it could have to make it stronger, I think. So that was my initial reaction when reading it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has a lot to do with Nisha, actually, and I agree that she wasn't, I don't want to say she wasn't the best main character, because she was good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with her, really, but I wasn't invested in her as much as some of the other characters, and I definitely enjoyed some of the side characters a lot more, because they were just a lot more dynamic. They were just more interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So we're going to get to Nisha a little bit more and the rest of those characters in just a little bit, but let's talk about some of the strengths of the book and what you guys thought were the strengths and what were interesting about the book in general. I know for me, some of the strengths were the infusion of Asian culture. I thought it was really cool how she took a lot of different cultures and made them into this one diverse place, and just took little things here and there that made it unique and made it different, because we don't always see unique and different worlds. We kind of see a lot of repetitiveness sometimes. So this was a unique and different world with a lot of societal hierarchy and things going on within it that made it interesting. And then the fact that within this culture you have families who have a 2-child limit, and of course the families prefer boys, so the girls kind of get pushed off into orphanages, or in this case the City of 1,000 Dolls, which trains them to be something different. That concept is really interesting, because it kind of reverts back to what modern day China does. I mean, they don't have a law that it's, you know, you have to get rid of your female children, but so many female children end up in orphanages because they want to have their children be male. So I thought it was a kind of an interesting take on adding in kind of a current topic that's happening in our world. So what did you guys think?
I definitely liked the infusion of Asian culture. That was something I really liked about Ion and Iona too. And in this one, it was very believable. It was realistic enough that this could have been a society that existed, you know, not that long ago. And obviously a lot of the elements are taken from what we know of Asian cultures, but I also liked how they threw in, you know, that there was magic in the world, that, you know, she could talk to cats, that there were these people who could transform into animals. It was a nice sort of combination of very realistic elements, but also these fantasy elements that I think blended well enough to make a really interesting story.
Yeah, I thought that I actually really liked the houses. I kind of lost their thread at a certain point. Like, I wasn't sure. Like, it was hard to discern the differences between the House of Flowers, the House of Beauty, and the House of Pleasure. Like, they all seemed like similar ideas.
Yeah.
But I liked that they trained... I liked that these girls were basically being manufactured for a male society, basically. And I thought that was a very interesting, like, setup for the story. I liked a couple of the characters. I liked Sashi. I liked Gina before she was killed. And yeah, and some of the writing was very nice. There were a couple of like turns of phrase that like kind of like she described one character like moving like a wolf or whatever, and it kind of was very evocative of the way Nisha was feeling. So I wasn't turned off by the writing style, which I sometimes am in books like this.
How did you guys feel about the matron? Was she a strength or a weakness?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we were ultimately in the end supposed to like her, but we were supposed to dislike her. Like, I liked her at first, and then it was like, oh no, she's mean. And I was like, well, okay, I guess we don't like her now. And then at the end it was like, oh no, but she was protecting her the whole time. I don't know. It was complicated, but not in a very sensible way, I think. Okay. I'm torn.
No, she's one of the characters that's a little bit trickier because there are elements of good and then there are these elements who are like, I wouldn't ever want to have to deal with her. So she's one of those characters that you love to hate and hate to love, but at the same time, you know, she's necessary and that she serves a purpose. So it's a complicated thing to kind of wrap around how she fits and how you feel about her within the story.
Yeah, I kept going back and forth on her a lot, and at one point I was actually pretty sure that she was the murderer because things just sort of started leading down that direction, and you sort of like her because she would do anything for these girls and she would protect the city at all costs, but then you dislike her because she would do anything for these girls and protect the city at all costs, no matter what that cost was. And I think that's why I was sort of borderline with her for so long. I think ultimately, in the end, I did like her, but, you know, not nearly as much as a lot of the other characters. Like you said before, Sashi was definitely one of my favorites. I thought she was a really fun character.
All right, so let's talk weaknesses. For me, I'm not going to lie, the telepathic cat thing was kind of a weakness. Because that automatically took it to, like, a more juvenile level for me. Just that whole... the whole idea, the whole concept, all of it, just kind of brought it down a whole level. Not that it wasn't executed kind of well, and, it had its purpose, and I get it. But at the same time, it wasn't for me. I wasn't reading a Warriors book. Do you guys know those books where it's all about the cat clans? And all, like, that's what it felt like at times, and that was just off-putting to me.
Yes, I 100% agree. When it was like, oh, she can talk to cats, it was like, oh, that's weird. And it was almost like in a more mature book, I would expect that concept to be a lot darker. Like, I mean, I don't want to go into my cat's mind, you know? And I feel like it was just like, oh, we all exist to help you, Nisha, and like, she doesn't ever question that, and she doesn't really ever question the fact that she can talk to them either. So it seemed to me kind of like almost like the author wanted this concept to be in the book, but that it didn't fit as well as it should have. Like, it stood out a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. At first, it really threw me off, and I was like, what the heck is going on here? But once it sort of, you know, the story got going and I got used to the idea that she could talk to the cats, I thought the idea was really cool, and some of the cats actually became a few of my favorite characters. So I think once you get used to the idea and suspend your disbelief, it's not too bad, but at first you're kind of like, whoa, I didn't really see that coming.
And what did you guys think about just the tension and things going on through the book? I mean, the book is based on the fact that these girls at the City of Dolls are being murdered. So we have a lot of murders going on. We have bodies piling up. And did you guys feel there was the appropriate amount of tension throughout the book and that it kind of did what it needed to do? Or was it kind of lacking?
This is my, I think, my main problem, which not even with the mystery, also with Nisha. Like, she finds out that she's basically about to be sold into slavery. And that deadline keeps changing too. Like, it's like, you're gonna be sold like now, and then it's like, well, like, we'll do it soon. And then it's like, oh, you know, tomorrow or whatever. Like, whenever it's convenient in the story for it to be important for you to be sold, like, you'll be sold soon. But she like, freaks out about that, and then she kind of forgets. And, like, when she's trying to find somebody to sponsor her, I was like, I would be running around like crazy, you know? And she's just like, oh, maybe I'll go to this person. They don't really like me at this house. I don't really know. And I that was kind of like, why aren't you upset? Like, why aren't you freaking out? And it was just like, I'll cuddle a cat now. It's like, that's not helping. But yeah, also with the murders, it was sort of like, okay, murder, and then never mind, whatever. And then, like, by the end, like, everything kind of came together and it was more of a focus. But in between the murders, it was sort of like, yeah, that's really weird. There's these murders going on. Like, what about that? That's strange. I did like that the first murder, that nobody kind of got it at first. I did like that it was sort of a, you know, just, like, that Nisha didn't know her. It wasn't, like, this hugely rocked that many people's worlds, which I thought was a good touch, because in a different story, it might have been, oh my gosh, you know, we all have to freak out about this initial incident, but I liked that it was a little more subtle than that.
And so then the last one that kind of stands out is that she's saved by an evil prince, which is, you know, cliched and been done before. So what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was very much a, like, in the final scene, it's like you're expecting Nisha to have, like, kind of all this power, even though she, you know, she starts to get her power, whatever power she has, taken away from her. And then like, it was like out of a play, like, where it's like a deus ex machina. It's like this prince who is a total jackass, and like, but he's just like, oh, okay, so I'll punish the bad people, and even though it kind of works politically against me, but he's basically just like, he's sort of the storyteller's prop, that he just kind of drops all of these things where basically they need to be. And it didn't, like, especially because he was a male figure and this was such a female driven story, to me it was like, I don't really know why this is necessary. You know, I kind of wish that things had resolved, like, the royalty were such distant figures, especially through the whole story, that it was like, I don't know why we need this prince to come in and save everything now, you know.
I liked the prince in that I liked to dislike him, I guess. He was a jerk, but I thought that played really well into the story. It was kind of nice to have somebody who wasn't totally evil, you know, wasn't in on the murders, but at the same time, they weren't really a nice guy either. But you're right in that, you know, she asked a lot of him in the end when he was like, oh, I owe you a life debt or whatever. And it was really convenient how much she got away with. I mean, she asked a lot of things of him, and he was just like, okay, are we done yet? Like, all right, one more thing, fine, that's totally cool. And it was a little unbelievable.
Yeah, especially since the concept of a life debt had kind of just been dropped a couple of times, and it was just like, oh, Jose or whatever, you know, she owes someone a life debt. We don't actually find anything out about that. You know, it's just like, oh, we have this idea now. And yeah, I agree with you. Like, I didn't dislike the prince himself. I actually thought he was kind of refreshing, in someone that was just like kind of like almost humorously nasty, whereas the other nasty characters were all like kind of mustache twirling. Whereas this guy had clearly had no investment in what was actually going on. He was just like, yeah, whatever. But yeah, the way he was used, I didn't like.
So let's talk about the general plot. Like, we've kind of touched on it here and there with some of the strengths and weaknesses that we talked about. But at the heart of this plot, we have a girl who basically doesn't belong anywhere, who was given to the City of Dolls. And she's protected because of a life's debt, which is what you just kind of mentioned. And then we have this murder mystery that starts to evolve early on, with this first murder that looks more like a suicide, and then we have murders that follow that. And Nisha is kind of going through trying to figure out who's doing the killing and what's really going on in the City of Dolls. And underlying all of that, we have kind of this romance element that's very minor. It's more of a relationship than, like, outright romance, I think. So we have these kind of three different things going on. We have Nisha not, you know, belonging anywhere, really. Then we have this murder mystery, and then we have the underlying romance. So is there any one of those three aspects that you guys just felt didn't work, or that worked spectacularly, or anything like that?
I thought the mystery aspect of it was pretty interesting. It was a little slow going, but near the end there, it definitely picked up a whole lot. And I think the author did well enough to sort of point the fingers at a lot of different people, and that you didn't really know who was going to be the murderer until they were truly revealed. I mean, I definitely had my suspicions of Tanaya, is that how you say it? I need like a pronunciation guide for this book. But I thought that it could have been her, and especially when Zahn said, "You wouldn't believe me as to who the murderer was." So I was thinking it was either the matron or Tanaya, and so it wasn't like a huge reveal or anything like that, but I thought that she did a good job of at least making it a little tough to definitely pinpoint who was behind everything that was going on. And in the end, you know, she wasn't really totally the only one that was behind what was going on. It was more like a conspiracy, too. So it was kind of cool how she ended up wrapping that all up.
I was going to say, I think the murder mystery part of it was executed fairly well. I don't think it was as easy to discern as a lot of murder mysteries are in the young adult genre, so I enjoyed that aspect of the book quite a bit, Karen. You make a really, you know, solid point with that. Even though the pacing was a bit slow on, that was like in general on the book, though. It wasn't just the murder mystery aspects, I don't think. But I think the murder mystery part itself was executed well.
I'm terrible at mysteries. Like, I actually saw a play once that was a mystery, and I saw it twice, and the second time I was still like, wait a second, I think it's this person, and I knew who did it, and I'm terrible. I didn't guess Tanaya at all, and I was actually not entirely satisfied with that, because I almost didn't know why, like, that she was capable of it. Like, I buy it, you know, it's not like it completely out of left field, but her interest in Nisha, I think, is probably what's the most confusing, because she comes off as such a self-serving person. Like, obviously she murders people so that certain secrets aren't given away, and this really, I mean, it jars for Nisha too, but, like, I didn't know why, as a character, she continued to be friendly with Nisha and, you know, one of her best friends, when she had nothing politically to gain from this friendship. Like she seemed to me sort of the type of person who would have dropped Nisha at a certain point, but I don't know. I mean, I didn't dislike it, and like I said, I certainly didn't guess it. But did it seem at all jarring to you guys from her personality?
I mean, a little bit. I think that was, but again, I think that's kind of a flaw that kind of goes throughout the entire book. We have these moments where not enough is explained. And then we kind of have these things that we're kind of left guessing, and they don't really fit with what we already know about the character. So there were these kind of ups and downs throughout the whole book, I think, that did that. So I guess by the end, I kind of just was accepting of it, because it had happened so frequently that it was kind of like, oh, okay, this is just where we're at this point in time.
Right.
Yeah, and for Tanaya, at least, I kind of chalked it up to the school sort of twisting her identity and her personality. I mean, she had trained literally her whole life to be with the prince, and then the fact that that might be taken away from her, or that he wasn't going to be solely hers, I think was just sort of like the last straw. And, you know, like they said, every, you know, their hairpin was a weapon. Like, even the House of Beauty learned how to defend themselves. And so I don't think it was totally out of left field, but I definitely understand where you're coming from as far as her relationship with Nisha, and that it is sort of strange that she didn't drop her, because she was on just a whole different level than Nisha was.
Yeah, I think one of the things that it's a really interesting idea that the way these girls are raised, like, you know, like her uncle says, like, twists them. It's a very good concept, and I'm actually really into that. I kind of think it would have been served more strongly if this wasn't Nisha's story, you know, that like a girl driven to commit multiple murders because of, you know, because of the way she's been raised and because of her price, literally, is really compelling. But because it's about Nisha, who doesn't end up being part of the system at all in the end, it kind of numbs that a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea to think of it, you know, what sort of story it would have been if it would have been from Tanaya's point of view. That I think, would have been a cool concept.
Yeah, I found myself thinking that a couple of times. Like, I kind of wish that, like, or maybe that we'd had, like, one perspective from a couple of houses and, you know, these stories kind of came together, because it was a really interesting world and I just felt like it was sort of boxed off by Nisha.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from with that statement. That makes sense. So moving on, we talked a little bit about the pacing. Did you guys think the pacing was slow? Was that just me, or was it kind of draggy at parts that made it hard to connect everything?
It definitely was.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
I wonder if, because this book is in a very strange place between middle grade and YA, I wonder if that was like, this book needs to be a certain number of pages long to be YA, as opposed to, like, if a lot of Nisha's, like, walking around had been cut, the book would have been a lot shorter and tighter and better, probably, but it might have landed more firmly in the middle grade section. I don't know. Total conjecture on my part, but...
No, I can see where you're coming from with that, but yeah, it didn't help the book at all, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of took away from it, so... I guess you have to choose what you want to do with it, really, in the end. So, looking at it, there's also this other kind of big reveal, if you will, towards the end of the book, where the cats are actually people. Yeah. And we have known one of the cat as a person most, you know, throughout parts of the book, but don't really know that it's him. Or maybe you guys did really know that it was him. Did you know that Tack was actually Jarrett the cat?
Yeah, I knew. I knew pretty early on. I don't remember, not like the first time we met him, but I think by the time he started like coming along every time Nisha was involved, and definitely once Jarrett was like out of the picture. And then at a certain point I was like, oh wait, Tack is cat backwards. So I guess it's
My god, I never noticed that.
I was like, well, I guess that mystery is over. Wow. But yeah, so yeah, I got that. And it's a little gross, to be honest. I'm a little creeped out.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. That was the only thing that kept going through my mind. I'm like, wait a minute. That just kind of, he was licking her hand and stuff. That's just weird. Like, weird. So yeah, I don't know. That's funny that it's cat spelled backwards. I didn't like think about it until I was like, Tack, what kind of name is Tack? And then you drop that one on me and my mind is blown.
I feel really dumb now for not noticing that. As far as like suspecting that there was more to Tack, I definitely thought that there was. I thought that it was a possibility that he was Jarrett, but I guess that never really solidified in my mind until it was revealed. And then I sort of did like a happy dance because I was so excited that, well, for one, that Jarrett was back and that there was more to Tack. I think that he's probably my favorite character in this book because I just really liked how, before you knew he was Jarrett, you know, he was just silent, but he was the protector. He was kind of funny, even though he didn't talk, and just his actions and his reactions and that sort of thing. And he was a nice sort of breath of fresh air compared to Devin, who I didn't really like. I didn't have any sort of sympathy for. So I was really excited that he was actually sort of a major character in the end.
I have to say that I really enjoyed Tack significantly more than I enjoyed Devin. Devin was your typical whiny nobleman, whereas Tack was the boy who didn't really have a place but was more noble than the nobleman, if you will. And so I was kind of secretly happy dancing when Tack punched Devin in the face. But yeah, other than that. So they both boys clearly play the roles in Nisha's, you know, quote-unquote love life. So we have that element of romance, and Nisha begins with, you know, desperately wanting Devin, who is a second son. He's noble. He's not supposed to have anything to do with her because she is castless or caseless. And so then you have Tak, who's always in the background and kind of builds up throughout the story. So how did you guys feel about those relationships? Were they built soundly? Were they realistic? Were they believable? Did they have a purpose? Or was it just kind of an underpinning of the story that was there to kind of have that element of romance within the book?
I mean, I liked the fact that the, like, you know me, I hate romance. So I liked the fact that the romance was more by necessity at first. Like, I didn't mind her being into Devin because she really had no other choice. And that's, like, twisted, and I like that. I mean, I didn't, like, particularly care if she got together with Devin. I think the author, I think she walked an interesting line with, like, making Devin, like, not necessarily, like, you didn't necessarily hate him, at least until he was like, oh no, you have limp, I can't love
you. Yeah, I was gonna say, I didn't hate him until the end.
Yeah, but, like, at the same time, you were like, yeah, this is not gonna work out. But I'm sorry, it skeeves me out that she was in love, that a cat was in love with her, and she's gonna be in love with a cat. Like, it bothers me, you know? Like, the whole time he's a cat, like, and sleeping on top of her, and, like, whatever, and licking her hand, like you said, and, like, he's part human. I don't know. I find that very difficult in general, like, people who go between cat and animal forms in fiction, and it's like, well, which one are you? And because people and animals are very different, and it's like, you want different things when you're a cat and then when you're a human, and I don't know. It played with my mind.
Yeah, it was interesting. So, Karen, do you have any feelings about the romance in the novel?
I definitely liked that it wasn't a major plot point, and that the fact that it was in there, like you said, was sort of by necessity. So it cut down on the sort of mushy romance part of it, which I tend to not really like either. And as far as Devin goes, I liked that he was neither good nor bad. He was sort of good in the beginning, and you liked him, but you knew it wasn't going to work out. Like, it was just so obvious from the first page. And then you sort of really hated him right there near the end because he was being a jerk. But then at the very end, he was going to speak for her, and, you know, she shook her head and she said no. And I guess I just kind of liked how he really did care for her, even though that wasn't enough. But at least he wasn't a bad guy. He was sort of a gray area, and I enjoy it when authors make characters like that. Sort of like the prince. Like, he did the right thing, but at the same time, he was kind of a jerk. So it was just sort of an interesting thing. And I'm sorry, but I love Tak and Jarrett, and I'm not weirded out at all. And I think it was great.
Oh, which one is he? Is he Tak or is he Jarrett? Which one? One is she going to be in love with? What if they get together and they're both in cat form and then she has babies and the babies are cats?
And then they can turn into people.
But what if they can't?
Then that would be really weird.
And then Kayla's just stuck on the...
I'm so disturbed.
She's a little too stuck. Moving on. So yeah, I mean, I think while reading it, you knew that Devin was never going to be redeemable enough to be with Nisha no matter what. Like, there was something about him, for me at least, while reading him, that I never suspected that he would be able to redeem himself enough to be with her and to be, to do the right thing. He was just wasn't that kind of character. So I guess I kind of always knew where that one was going. But that was just me. So let's see. Is there anything else you guys want to bring up about the plot or the book in general?
Yeah, I actually have one more thing. This bothered me quite a bit at the end of the book, in that Nisha, I don't remember exactly how it came about. Basically, she found out that she was Sune, that she could turn into an animal. That's the whole, like, cat tattoo, the tiger tattoo, and all of that. And I don't know, like, I thought that was sort of obvious, like, 150 pages before the end, and it was sort of dumb, I guess, how she was like, oh my god, you know, I'm this person that can change into an animal, too, that she was at least part Sune, And so, I don't know, was that just me, or were you guys sort of like, shouldn't you have known that, like, a really long time ago?
Yeah, well, that was part of my problem with why the cats kept on, you know, hanging around her, and she never questioned it, and it was just sort of like, I could see getting used to the idea that you can talk to cats, fine, but, like, the fact that you have literally, like, a tribe who is all over you all the time, and, like, you know that people into animal people exist, and it never kind of occurs to you to be like, maybe there's something else going on here. I also wasn't crazy on the fact that it was like, you know, Nisha's nothing, and then she gets to be everything. She's part Kildy, she's part Soon, she's, you know, educated in the dolls, and like, it was sort of like, other than the deaths, like, there was no major sacrifice, really. That was, I guess, maybe kind of consciously made, and you kind of think that she and Sashi will eventually make up, and I don't know, it wasn't as fulfilling for me.
So you think she was overly rewarded, that it was a little too much by the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely.
And what do you think about, like, why doesn't she think that, like, why isn't she confused by the...
I don't know, like, that's a great question. Again, that was one of those things, like I said, there were things brought up throughout the whole novel at different points in time where you're like, okay, we're kind of glossing this, and that it doesn't really get resolved later. So it's almost like things happened as moments of convenience for the author, if you will. So I felt like we had a couple of those throughout the story that, well, we need to have this happen here, so it's going to happen, but there's not going to be a lot of explanation around it, and we're not going to try to explain it later. So it's just kind of like moments of convenience that took place and things that were never fully explained that just happened throughout the story. So it kind of falls into that category for me with all, you know, some of the other things that occurred that weren't fully explained.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely felt like there were a lot of kind of, like, little info dumps. Like, not like little pieces of information, just like little info dumps that you were like, oh, okay, that's what happened. I figured she was Kildy also. That's the word, right?
Yes.
I don't know, my book in front of me. I figured that, like, quite a while before. And also the thing with her parents, like, what was that? Like, they were terrified of something, and then they ran away, and then they got killed. Like, what? I that was like, okay, this is kind of interesting, but they never kind of go into it.
Yeah, it was kind of, again, it was like, well, here's this really brief explanation of what's going on. So it wasn't the info dump that we could have used to kind of clarify what happened with her parents and why they basically left her at the city with a tribe of cats to protect her. It wasn't fully explained. I don't know. Karen, do you feel like you had enough explanation on what happened with her parents?
Not really, but I think that's sort of a setup for a future book. So that didn't bother me as much as some of the other parts where I think you're right in that it sort of glossed over things that I think should have been explained more. And it wasn't just, you know, the questions that we didn't get answered in this book because it's going to be in a future book. They were questions that should have been answered in this book and or things that should have been explained a little bit more in depth that it just sort of disappeared, like you said, because it was convenient for the author.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that kind of falls into that category too. Anything else for The City of 1,000 Dolls?
I will say good on the author for having a story with mostly non-white characters. That was refreshing.
Yes, there was a definite diverse feel to the story, which was, again, it's unfortunate, but it is rather unusual in the YA genre. It just, all you have to do is look at the covers of books to know that. And that's just kind of, that was good. And, like, again, there was a lot about the book that was good, and there was also, I mean, it was kind of a 50-50 split, and lots of people, I think, will like this book. It just wasn't necessarily a book for me.
Yeah. I feel like I want to write really dark fan fiction about this book. Like, like, what's the life of a girl in the House of Pleasure like? You know, or a girl who, or like, what about Zahn? Like, what would that have been like if she had been, like chemically forced basically to create an attachment to an old guy and then forced to marry an old guy? And it just, Like, there's a lot of very, very cool ideas in there. It's just, like, we just keep coming back to Nisha and the cats and, you know, yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of places it could have gone that would have, I think, would have clearly defined it as a young adult book, and it didn't go there. It stayed that middle ground and didn't kind of go where it needed to go in a lot of ways. It took the safer route, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah, so now that we've talked about this book thoroughly, what do you guys think? There is a book two expected. It's a companion novel, not a sequel. Again, check our book bite conversation for and more information on that. But what do you guys think? It'll probably won't be out for at least another year, maybe a little longer. So what do you guys think? Would you be interested in reading the companion novel?
Well, do we have a summary for that, or it's just like...
I think it's just out there that it's a companion novel. I don't know if there's a summary yet. I can look. Hold on a second.
On her website, I have it up right here. Okay. It says, yeah, she has a frequently asked questions section about it, and one of the questions says, what about Nisha's story? And she said, the second book doesn't follow Nisha, but it's a big part of her story all the same. It will answer some of the questions left over from the first book, but probably not the ones you're thinking of. So that sort of... I don't know. She says you'll find out a lot more about the Sune and the caste system and get to see the capital city of Kamal. And there's bonus Black Lotus, too, for those of you who wanted more of that. So I sort of have to wonder if it's about her parents or something. I don't know if it'll be like a prequel type book or if it'll follow a completely different character. I feel like all of the main characters, like Nisha and Jarrett and Esmer and Sashi, they're sort of all going in the same direction, you know? So I don't really know whose story it could really be.
I think a sequel-ish book for me would be... I mean, if I find out that it's like... I don't know. The capital city does seem interesting to me. I think there could be some interesting politics with the people who are terrified of physical imperfections. And it'd probably be a paperback read for me if I found out that it was good. But I would give this book to like a 13-year-old. I really do. I think I really would. I think it would maybe challenge them just enough, but not like scar them for life, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I will probably pick it up from the library, considering I order the books for the library. I have that option. but yeah, I don't know if I would go out and buy the book, per se. I mean, it is intriguing. I'm kind of curious to know what it would be about specifically. I have a feeling it is about her parents. Just by the way it's described, it makes more sense. So I would look into it, but I don't know how devoted I would be to reading it. It could sit in my TBR pile for a really long time.
Yeah, I agree.
The freeze frame for the book trailer says Courtesans, the House of Pleasure, so YouTube agrees with me. That's the most interesting part.
Gotta love YouTube.
Yeah. Actually, one thing I was, like, the Shadow Assassin thing didn't do it for me. Like, I kind of, first of all, like, they were listed in the front of the book, which is probably not the author's fault, but it was like, House of Shadows, okay, no real mystery whether they exist or not. And then it was sort of like, well, whatever. You know, it wasn't, like, particularly important in the end. I mean, they're vaguely interesting, but they weren't especially alluring to me. I don't know. Sorry, I just remembered that plot point.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, I think they could have gone a lot farther in making that darker and more interesting. There's a lot of potential there that I don't think she really explored. But, you know, maybe in this next book she'll be able to do something about that. I'm interested in the next book. I have a really hard time, like, letting anything go. So even if I don't particularly like a book and there are sequels, I kind of tend to pick them up along the way anyway. But that's just me. But I think for this one, you know, I did enjoy this book. It really wasn't that bad. There are some flaws, but I've definitely read worse books, and the concept's really cool. So I think, you know, like you said, depending on what the next book is about will probably lead me to either pick it up right away or just kind of let it sit around for a little while till I get around to it.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of in the same boat on that one. So we'll have to see when we get more information about the book, how we all feel, and check back in on that one, I think. So, just so you all know, the next book that we are reading for Book Hype Book Club will be 17 and Gone by Nova Ren Suma. And we've all started reading it, I think. You guys have both started reading it, yes?
Mm. Yep.
And it's a really intriguing book, so I think you guys will like it. So make sure you are ready for that. Probably in a couple weeks' time, we're going to try to get that one out as well, because we kind of got a little bit behind on book club books. But we will get caught up. What book club doesn't get behind on their books? I mean, seriously.
Exactly.
So we'll get caught up on that. And we will also start looking at the reader's choices for book clubs and start getting some of those in there as well. And we'll let you know what those are shortly. So thank you guys for listening. As always, you can leave comments in any of our book posts. You can tweet us at BookHype, or you can email us. You can find our email addresses on Hypeable. So thank you for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Michal.
And I'm Karen.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.